Do you feel like your sleep patterns are different from the rest of the world? Do you sometimes feel the unwanted urge or need to fall asleep during the day, even when you need to be awake? Do you also feel just too wide awake to fall or stay asleep during the night? If you are blind, this could be a real sleep problem related to a lack of light needed to keep your body in sync. Learn more about an ongoing clinical research study that is evaluating a new investigational treatment for this type of sleep problem. When calling, you can also complete a short sleep survey. When calling, you must be between 18 and 75 years of age and totally blind. Volunteers will be compensated for their participation in the clinical study and will receive study-related medication, medical evaluations, and transportation at no cost. If you or someone you know might be affected, call toll-free 1-888-389-7033 or email info@non24registry.com. That's info@non24registry.com. Comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, or third-party resellers. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 107, video games, news, and reviews for disabled gamers. This evening, our guest will be from ablegamers.com. And moderating this evening's Tech Chat is Joe Steinkamp.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us for Tech Chat. We have on the guys from the Able Gamers website, and before we get into that, I want to at least start off by saying that some of the games that we're going to discuss and cover tonight are not fully accessible to those who are visually impaired or blind, but one of the reasons that we're going to talk to Able Gamers is they covered the E3, which is the Electronic Entertainment Expo at the beginning of the month, and they were covering it for their site, and I wanted them to come on board and talk about what it was like for them to cover this and what it was like for them to be accepted as disabled gamers amongst the others out there. But I also want to cover some games because a lot of you guys are parents and you're going to be looking at purchasing games for your children, and you might want to know a little bit more about those games or what these guys might think about those games. And we're going to talk about the new consoles too a little bit too. So just to give you a little bit of background, I've been a gamer. I've had a lot of vision when I was younger, and so I've had Atari 2600 and other game systems, and I actually used to sell video games in retail years and years ago. But as I've lost my vision over the years, I play different types of video games now, fighting games, musical games, RPGs, and stuff like that. But we're going to talk about games in general and what it was like for these guys to go through the E3 conference. Let me let them introduce themselves so you can get used to their voices. Steve, why don't you go first?
Yeah, hi, my name's Steve Spahn. I'm the editor-in-chief of ablegamers.com, as well as the community outreach chair for the Able Gamers Foundation.
Mark?
Hi, I'm Mark Barley. I'm the president and co-founder of the Able Gamers Foundation.
And Marco?
Hi, I'm Marco Pasqua, and I'm a staff writer at Able Gamers.
Excellent. Guys, let's talk a little bit about the site, how long you've been around, some of the highs, the lows. Just kind of give everybody a brief overview of what's going on over at ablegamers.com.
Well, I can give you some of the lows, and Steve can give you some of the highs.
Okay.
We started the site. The site was started because I'm a disabled veteran. I had a spinal cord injury while I was serving active duty. But it didn't really affect my gaming. What really affected my gaming was the fact that my best friend since the sixth grade, who we did everything together, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis back in 2002. And we used gaming as a way of staying connected to each other. And one day we were going to log in and game at our pre-designated gaming hour, and she didn't log in. And I called and her husband picked up, and I could hear my best friend crying in the background. And I asked what was going on, and my friend basically told me, well, I can't feel my hand, I don't want a game. She hung up the phone. And so I got on this newfangly thing called Google, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, and started doing some searches, trying to find some stuff that she may be able to use to help her game. Was really coming up with no results found that were satisfying what we were looking for, so we created the site. And so we created ablegamers.com in 2004. Our lows were the site was online for about 6 months before we got our first comment ever. And I remember calling Stephanie excited because we broke 12 hits one day.
Wow.
Steve will tell you the high points.
Okay.
Yeah, we've come a long way since those days. I joined about 3 years ago. Right about that time, AbleGamers.com was kind of going through a lull in our traffic. We had reached out to a lot of developers. A lot of them were kind of getting cool to the idea of accessible gaming on the whole, and we really needed to step up our campaign to reach out to developers. So we really kind of went with a grassroots effort, going to events like PAX, wearing t-shirts saying, you know, so-and-so developer, why don't you talk to us? And it worked. We got our foot in the door, and since then we've climbed the Alexa rankings up to 400,000 at our peak, with thousands of people who visit our website every month and lots of hits. The foundation was created 6 months after my joining, and the foundation mostly started to speak to developers in a capacity of developing video games as opposed to what happened.
Do what?
Oh, Steve's digitizing a little bit.
Oh, he's cyloning a little bit, but you're okay. You're good.
Cyloning, so nice.
So you started to work with developers.
We started to work with developers on Gaming Accessibility 101, and that ended up going off pretty well. In turn, we decided to do a review database on AbleGamers.com, where you can come type in whatever game name you're looking for, and we'll actually give you a score based on our viewpoint of its accessibility, from mobility impairments for people such as myself with muscular dystrophy, to people with low vision who have difficulty seeing text, whether there's resizing options, etc. We'll tell you what options are there for you before you spend your money on the game. Our goal is to stop people from wasting money on games and technology that are not accessible to them, and then go back to the developers and tell them how to reach audiences like yours and ours.
And that's important, because there are people with low vision or high partials, for lack of a better term tonight, who are multiply disabled. There are individuals who've come back from our foreign wars who were maybe avid gamers and still want to be avid gamers in one form or another. And we focused on this podcast on iOS games and other games that are kind of more focused traditionally for the blind and visually impaired. But it's nice to be able to play other, you know, quote unquote, mainstream games like Fruit Ninja and others that actually are kind of a little bit more friendly to what those are like.
So really, to Steve's point, just to wrap up the highs and lows. So I just kind of logged on while we were chatting, and so I told you that I called Stephanie because we had the 12 hits, and last month we got a little over 2 million.
That's fantastic.
I was still not going to brag, but sheesh. Okay.
No, that's great, especially for what we brought you on to talk about, which was E3. To get an idea here, this is a very large yearly convention that takes up a very large part of Los Angeles, and 45,000 to 48,000 people were there this year for E3. Not all of them needed to be there, because the show is generally for game journalists and buyers. What this is people like that work at GameStop or Walmart or something like that, who are buyers for games, make a decision of how many games they want to buy for the year for their stores. And so E3 is kind of a big show party, just like the National Federation of the Blind Convention and ACB is for those of us in blindness. Was the registration process difficult for you guys? Did you have any issues with trying to make adaptations to going in there? I mean, I'm not sure if they have a box necessarily for disabilities and when you're going to sign up for something like this.
Well, when we first put in our media request passes, we were rejected, and it really was nothing from E3's perspective. They had a marketing company that takes care of that for them. I mean, obviously, as you stated, everyone wants to go to E3, and you know, they've had problems in the past where people have stood up, you know, a gaming site 2 months before E3 so they can get passes. So our comm scores, because as much as I brag about our hits compared to what some of the bigger boys get, that's nothing.
Not one up.
Yeah, we're not some of the bigger. So But we have some contacts within the ESA, the Electronic Software Association, which is the parent organization that puts on E3, and said, hey, guys, you know who we are. You know we've been around for a while. It's going to be impossible for us to make one-up numbers because our core audience that we cater to is just not that big. And our contact was like, oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Let me make a few phone calls. And within 45 minutes, our press passes went from rejected. Marco sent us a text saying, I just got this email that now says they're approved. And I'm like, I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, it was literally like a 10 to 15 minute turnaround. I'm like, guys, it looks like we're not going to make it this year. I'm devastated. To, wait a minute, they just said they're overturning their decision and welcome to E3.
And to Mark's point, although we're not as big as one of them, we don't have the general gaming audience, it is important to note that there are upwards of 50 plus million disabled people, of which 33 million are gamers. So we may not have a huge 33 million per month database hit like 1UP does, but we do represent a really large portion of people that really want to get into games, just like the people listening to your podcast.
Well, and there's also people who may not necessarily declare themselves as being disabled. Jeff Gerstmann over at Giant Bomb, who I'm a great big fan of, followed him over from GameSpot and some other places, is colorblind. And I believe there's another person on staff at Giant Bomb that's colorblind. It's one of the reasons why Jeff has been adamant about having not just black text on a white background, but also white text on a black background at his site. So, you know, there are people that might not necessarily declare themselves or recognize themselves as being disabled that may actually have issues that might require some of the things that you guys are advocating for. So on, at the place in general, do you guys find that getting to some of the major events, going through Kenji Hall, going through these places, are they accessible? Or do they have clear walkways? I mean, can you get past all the booth babes?
Marco?
Well, at E3, actually, they did a fairly good job of making sure that there was a lot of open space. Now, keep in mind, that's with the fact that there are thousands of people on the floor at one time. For myself, I have cerebral palsy, so I use a manual wheelchair to get around. And let me tell you, it was tough sometimes because they had double thick carpet. Because what they did was they had the initial carpet of the expo floor, but then they put a brand new layer of carpeting over top of that carpet so that they don't ruin it during E3 time. So it was double thick. And if anyone knows about wheeling in a wheelchair, if you have a carpet, it's bad enough, but then you double that up, it makes it even tougher. All this in mind, I was carrying my camera, my voice recorder, all this at once. So if I didn't have my girlfriend helping me there and helping me out, it would have been next to impossible. So
when they do the special booths, like let's say the Sony booth, I'm remembering the one for the PlayStation 2 years ago that had a giant ramp to the second deck of video machines up above. Do you find those difficult to get through, or is there not enough room for you to maneuver through some of those, or?
Surprisingly enough, 99% of the booths that I went to were all wheelchair accessible. And if they didn't have a ramp on the main area, they had a secondary ramp around the side. And all I had to do was ask a PR rep, and they would direct me to where I needed to go in order to get there. So I was quite impressed, actually.
One of the benefits of having that show in California, I guess.
Well, absolutely.
When you have conversations with the publishers, you know, when you're approaching them, I dare say this, and I want to get your natural reaction, but is it because of you're an oddity, or that you have genuine interest for people? Now, I say this because when I was in radio, I would go to interview bands, and because I would display my cane, let's say, you know, Joey Belladonna from Anthrax would come out and go, I'll talk to her. Ooh, I've never been interviewed by a blind guy before. I'll talk to him. And so there was a little bit of novice coming in there because I was a blind guy in radio for some reason, and that made me special. Do you ever run into that kind of thing, or do you really have built up now over time some relationships and they come to you?
Well, I'll comment first. Can I comment first, and then I'll let Steve comment on other shows that aren't E3. But when my experiences at E3 were actually, yes, I mean, it would be a lie to say that people don't approach you more because of the chair. I mean, maybe they assume that or whatever device you may be using, that because you're trying to get in, that you should have priority because they can see that you're using an assistive device of some sort. But, you know, I think a lot of that also comes down to, you could be a person in a wheelchair like myself and be quiet and kind of sit in the corner, and that doesn't necessarily grant you all of a sudden that somebody's going to part the seas and be like, oh, hello, my name is such and such. I mean, I'm a pretty outspoken person myself. So when I was at E3, I was making sure to get right up there in the PR people's faces and say, hello, my name is Marco Pastor from Able Gamers, and how are you? So it's tough to say whether they were swayed one way or another because of that. But.
And then we really try very hard not to, quote, play the disabled card. We're not some, you know, organization that will hide the fact that we're working for disabled people. We are very
well disabled. It's pretty hard not to.
Yeah, almost the entire staff of Able Gamers, the foundation and the comm, have some sort of disability and a different range of disabilities, which gives us a really good view of the world. We approach developers from a factual standpoint. We approach in the money. Here's what you could be doing. Here's what you'd be earning if you would just pay attention to our cause. And that usually gets the PR people going. And from a gaming standpoint, we just approach the end users and the producers with, you know, here's how you can be more accessible. And that's usually a better approach. But, I mean, I think your question kind of has two answers. One, you know, our answer would be we don't particularly play to the wheelchairs and such. But I think there is a natural here's a dude in a wheelchair who wants to talk to me. I better listen to them, you know. But that's not to say when we cut in line using the almighty press pass at one of these events, we don't get stared at just like every other press person we've had one.
It's true.
there's some universal acceptance on either side of that line, I would imagine.
Cutting into the line at Brink, getting death stares from people in the line. You bet.
That's true, we did.
You should have seen the lineup for Call of Duty for general admission people when I was there. The people that would spend hundreds of dollars just to stand in the conference floor for the chance to see what's coming out next. It was ridiculous, but an eye-opening experience.
Before we get into the big three events, and we're just going to focus on the major threes and then some of the games tonight, is there any stories you guys want to tell about E3 or previous E3s before we jump in to specific coverage here?
Well, we've never been to another E3, so we don't have any previous E3 stories. It's expensive to go to California. Marco is from the Great White North, and Steve and I are both East Coast based, so it's always a trek to get over to California.
So something like PAX East is more of your speed then, because it's out that way.
Oh yeah,
correct.
Okay,
we usually get all the East Coasters, and we do PAX Prime every year. So
yes,
okay, yeah, and what PAX is. We're speaking in code here. This is the Penny Arcade Expo for those who are not into gaming culture. Penny Arcade is a website.
I didn't even know what it meant.
Yeah. It started as a webcomic and then turned into this geek chic place for gaming because these guys were old school gamers and they started their own convention for people who couldn't go to the big E3. And those things have really exploded over time. So there's one on the West Coast in Seattle and then another one, PAX Prime, over on the East Coast where these guys are.
Boston.
I don't know if Steve or Mark, you have any stories from PAX, but I mean, I did get a chance to meet Larry Herb, the director of programming for Xbox Live at the Xbox Live tweet up, which was a cool experience. That was definitely cool.
You also met Major Nelson, didn't you?
That is Larry Herb.
That's Larry Herb.
No, I don't know. Yeah. His name is Major Nelson.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's what it says at Xbox Major Live. Nelson.
I met Major Nelson, and he was a great guy. So, no, it was really cool to be able to tweet up and, you know, see how crazy Twitter is these days with, you know, all of a sudden you can get a message saying that there's this event going on, and next thing you know, you're there with hundreds of people, you know, experiencing this and potentially meeting people that you really wanted to meet. So,
although Marco did get kicked out of a couple of parties because they overbooked the lists and celebrities were coming in, kicking people off the list.
Yes, that was an experience. We were supposed to be able to go to the Sonic the Hedgehog 20th birthday anniversary party. And we were already set to go on the list. And Wait, what was that?
Yeah, his birthday is today. Today, Sonic's 20.
Well, there you go. So this is a perfect topic then. But they were having the pre-party at E3, which is fantastic. And we already had our name on the list, and that was all great. But believe it or not, because we were in LA, of course, the city of all the stars, they got wind of this party going on. And next thing you know, as soon as A-list celebrities want to go to Sonic's party, they started bumping people off the list who had already signed up. So that's basically what happened. And then they reached capacity.
Marco, you should have used the wheelchair at this point.
Well, I mean, I could have screamed, "I have a wheelchair," while going down the line, but I thought that may be inappropriate. So
no, you go up to the bouncer and you say, "Look, who are you going to let in? Me with the wheelchair or Johnny Depp? Come on."
Yeah. Yeah.
What has Megan Fox done for you lately?
Oh, nothing. That's why she's not in the latest Transformers.
But the Sega rep, to make it up to him, made him play Sonic Generations, so it was all good.
Which is a good game, by the way. I will say that it's actually kind of very, very cool.
So Sonic Generations is a game that's coming out this fall, which is the old traditional Sonic 2D, and then this 3D kind of I don't want to say fixed camera perspective, but there were a lot of games that used the riding and fixed cam this year, and we'll get into that as we go further, especially as we move to our first of the three. Let's jump into Microsoft, guys, and talk about what happened with the press event with Microsoft. You were there, Marco. What was the vibe like on the floor before everything started?
I think people were really pumped. You know, obviously there was a lot of hype in terms of the things that were going to be unveiled for the Kinect and what was to come. So from my perspective, and for Able Gamers, the Able Gamers community, we always want to, obviously, as Steve and Mark had said, ensure that the games that are coming out, you know, what kind of aspects could our community or could our readers, you know, benefit from. So that was kind of how I went into my coverage with that is, okay, you know, all these great things are coming out, but what is going to be accessible to all of our viewers, or all of our readers? So, but the vibe was awesome. The room was packed, and I was just pumped and ready to go.
Kinect certainly did take kind of center stage this year. You know, it almost felt in a way like this is the stopgap year before next year's new console. It's no secret that Microsoft is hiring people for designs of the new console. They're ramping up things in the background. But it really felt kind of weird because they started off their press conference with a demo that then didn't have its controller connect, which was kind of awe-inspiring. And then continued with demo after demo after demo. They didn't do the talking head, Robbie Bach, Peter Moore come out.
But they haven't done that for years. Ever since E3 came back online a couple of years ago, Microsoft has put on a very tight, fast-paced show. My biggest disappointment with the Microsoft coverage was last year they gave everybody in the audience a brand new Xbox.
Yeah, and the Slim.
and poor Marco got a good show, and thanks for coming.
I do think that they broke the bank last year by doing that. They realized they couldn't have every show like their Oprah Winfrey, you know what I mean?
And you get a car.
Exactly.
and you get a copy of Star Wars Kinect, and you get a copy of Star Wars Kinect.
Even that would have been nice, let's be honest. But no, unfortunately, Mark is right. There wasn't a lot of, there wasn't actually any swag given out this year. But that's aside the point, really. You know, we just wanted to know what they were going to be releasing and if it was going to be great.
Some of the things that I saw were pretty exciting. It's no secret. Kinect, the Microsoft people actually reached out to the Able Gamers Foundation last year before the Kinect was released, and they invited us out to Seattle for a accessibility roundtable. And they were phenomenal hosts. They spent a day under NDA at the time, which is a non-disclosure agreement, and they showed us the Kinect, which was still in prototype form, and actually set up like 25 Kinect stations in the room next door to us, and we went and experienced all the titles that were the initial titles when the Kinect rolled out. And then they had like 30 moderators there asking for, there was about 20 of us in this event, asking they had like more moderators than people asking us like, well, you know, what are your thoughts of this game? How could this game be made more accessible? And I saw some of the fruits of that, and I'm really excited. I saw some of the fruits of that in this press event. One of the biggest things that we kept harping on them last year was all of the games that kept coming out with required you to be fully standing.
Right, yeah.
They required you to be. Yet, and Marco can talk to it, they showed a game where the guy was like sitting down, you know, riding Forza. His horse.
I remember Forza because you were supposed to be able to see your foot moving on the pedal.
Well, not only that, but they had the Kinect. What is the RPG that they were showing where he was had a horse-drawn carriage that he was, you know.
Fable 3.
Yeah, Fable. Yeah.
So they kind of heard some of the feedback, which was, hey, can we have a few games where we don't have to be standing up so someone who would be in a wheelchair could still play?
That's awesome. And, you know, body movement, upward body movement, there's a lot of running in place with Star Wars Kinect. I was watching the demos. And could it just, you know, look at the upper body movement? Could you just, you know, move your shoulders back and forth or something like that to simulate? You know, they also seem to be very heavy into media. I was excited to see that I could use, you know, the Kinect's voice input to be able to search Netflix, Bing, and some of the other media plays that they were shooting for this year.
That was one of the only things that I originally was happy about when it came out. We covered it virtually last year, and I did a couple of pieces on the effects of voice control. Voice control is very important for people with low vision who can't see the buttons to push them as easily as someone who can flick a remote with their wrist and just do it almost blind, like a schoolgirl texting, as well as someone like myself that just doesn't have that kind of option. You know, I want to be able to communicate with my devices. I type with Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is a voice recognition program, and I use Say to Play to help me play video games when I cannot push buttons on my keyboard. So voice recognition was really great to see in the Kinect. My only caveat to that, though, is there are certain areas where I think they're trying to push it a little bit too much. Take, for example, End of the World, or Tom Clancy's End of the World. There are certain areas where you're just trying to lean on voice recognition a little bit too much. And I'm not sure that they're really ready to replace traditional controllers with voice recognition.
Because it's novel and new.
It is.
It certainly felt that way for what's going to come in Mass Effect 3. I like the idea of calling out, you know, ideas like Renegade so it'll give the right answer, but it also feels kind of like it's taking you out of the moment. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. I'm thinking of N+ and some other games that did it a little better. I'm just not sure how I feel about that with, say, something like Mass Effect, where...
You know, the only cool one I really saw, Mass Effect 3... is apparently going to have where you can be sort of, you know, say this and it will say that as your character, which could be cool. And another software for the PC that they're thinking about integrating to the Kinect is piloting games like Microsoft's Flight Sim for the Kinect. They want to have it where your co-pilot will actually answer you. So you can say, you know, rudder up, and it'll be like, yes, Captain, or whatever. So, I mean, there is some more interaction I could see where that goes on, and it could be like you're talking to someone or talking through the screen. I just hope they don't go overboard with it, like everything they do.
See, I would so play that just so it could be like, this is your captain speaking. Today's movie will be... And that's the only thing I would use that feature for.
Well, I
think it's really exciting myself, but...
Yeah. They kind of call that the Yellum interface. That's the Captain Kirk sitting in the middle of the Enterprise, you know, yelling commands at people kind of thing. And like you said, how does it work that it's not gimmicky? But I'll tell you where it might work really well. There was the Microsoft schizophrenia where we're family, but we're hardcore, but we're family. What do you guys make of Sesame Street and Disney? See, there's a Disney Universe game, and then I'm interested to see what Double Fine does with the Sesame Street license.
Can't wait.
I think it's going to be awesome. I actually had a chance to sit down with Disney and play the Disney Universe, and I'm actually really pumped about it. I mean, yeah, go ahead. It's it's your classic Disney characters, and you might think that if you're an adult, that's not one of your things. But I'll tell you, the second that you sit down with that and you play Disney Universe, which in my opinion is their response to Little Big Planet, so to speak, except you're playing with Disney characters, it's actually quite fun, and there's a lot of co-op opportunities there with you and your family that you can play. So,
I will say to Disney Interactive's credit, they are an excellently friendly organization. As Marco can tell you more details, we are working with them to possibly go in and talk to the Disney video game developers about accessibility. One of the only developers outside of Rockstar and Mythic BioWare that have invited us in to actually talk to developers face-to-face.
Marco? Before we go on, Marco, I want to remind everybody that the articles are being displayed here in Accessible Event, so you can read along with this, or you can hop over to our show notes with links to a lot of these coverage articles that we're talking about. And you can read about Disney Universe over at AbleGamers.com, but you can also get to those links if you don't go to that site directly, but you should, through our show notes, and they'll link you right to them as well.
I couldn't agree more.
Thumbs up.
So they did have some hardcore stuff there too. So we had Call of Duty 3, we had Tomb Raider, and there was a cryptic, not so cryptic, Halo announcement there. New trilogy, guys? Halo 4?
Never heard of that game.
some guy called Master something?
Everybody gasped when that trailer came on. Yeah, you should have just felt the tension in the room was like, are you kidding me? That's great. And I don't play the Halo series myself, but I mean, I could just tell from everyone else in the room that was just something that obviously being a gamer, I know that that's something that everyone was waiting for. And so I'm interested to see where they're going to go with it.
Call me the eternal pessimist, but all I have to say is the second set of Star Wars movies. Okay, thank you.
I don't think Halo 4 is a prequel, but I do get the point that 343 it has to outdo George Lucas. That is that's a low bar to cross, but it is possible. Did any of the other Microsoft announcements or events jump into things? Tomb Raider, Gears 3, anything like that, guys?
Tomb Raider looked really cool. I played Tomb Raider way back in the day on my PS2. I may have actually had it on PS1. And really enjoyed it.
Commodore 64?
No, they didn't make that game for Commodore 64.
386 maybe, but that Sega Saturn, if that helps.
Back in my day, we had 32 bits of color, and we liked it just fine.
You really just probably bring up the Saturn? Holy crap. Just turn the podcast off.
I will say this about Tomb Raider, though, for any parents that are out there, this version of Tomb Raider is a little bit darker than the older traditional Tomb Raider series. So it's just something to consider if you're going to be considering to purchase it.
And you know what, Marco? One thing you should talk about is the QTEs and our stance on that. Events.
Oh, right.
Quick time events. Let's describe what that is real quick, guys. A QTE has been around for a long time, Dragon's Lair, but there was a game for the Sega Dreamcast called Shenmue, which brought it back into predominance. And what happens is as certain key sequences are happening on screen, a little thing comes up and tells you to press the A button or the X button or press these directional buttons at this time. And you have to be precise on that, almost to the point of the frame of animation, to get past it with some people. So a QTE, when we mention that, are these little mini games where you have to press buttons in time with things. Okay, I'm sorry, Marco, go ahead.
No, it's fine. So just like Joe is saying, basically what it comes down to is, with you saying the person has to be exactly precise, that's exactly it. And that's why, in the disabled community, for certain gamers, it's the bane of our existence. Because if it means we have to hit this certain sequence of keys in a certain amount of time, I mean, for some people, that's not really possible. So that's why when a game is sort of flooded with too many QTEs, it becomes ridiculous. But so there was a little bit of chatter on our website about is this going to be too much for gamers to not really want to enjoy the Tomb Raider experience.
And you can't get past it. Some of these you actually have to do it correctly in order to go further in the game, and they're not something you can always memorize because they want to give replay value to a game. So you can't say, okay, it's AAB. Oh, no, okay, it's AAA. You can't do that because for some of them, they want the replay value so it'll change, and it's not something you can memorize.
I really hope that something like Rockstar did. Rockstar also has some QTEs in their L.A. Noir. When we were invited to New York to see the headquarters of Rockstar, they showed us a preview of L.A. Noir, and we were concerned initially about these QuickTime events where you suddenly go from, and for those who don't know, L.A. Noir takes place in the 40s, you're a detective going through the Gumshoe thing and solving cases. Along the way, you're going to get into conflicts with different thugs and stuff like that, and you're going to have instances where you need to press this button, that button, and this button really quickly in order to have a fight with the opponent, in order to subdue them for interrogation. And if you fail three times, the game says, do you want to keep trying, or do you just want to go ahead and move on? And if you tell it you want to move on, then it treats it as if you successfully completed it with no penalty.
And we kind of call that the I win button.
Yeah. And it's not something that you can take that option out in that game. You don't have to use it, certainly. But that's one of the things that Able Gamers preaches to developers is put the option in there for somebody that needs it. And for those who don't need it, don't push the button.
Exactly. Yeah. If you can just toggle it in and out, it's perfect.
I learned something new because I go to Mexican every Friday night, and QTE to me is quesos, tacos, and enchiladas.
Well, it has changed over the years. You know, we in the internet adopt all sorts of culture. The thing that I can say is that a lot of games from Sony seem to have that displayed as well. Moving on to their press event, what were your impressions, guys, of how Sony came out and started with their conciliatory "we're sorry"?
You didn't hear what happened at the press event? It was hacked and everyone's ID was stolen.
Oh, I think I remember tweeting something like that. Oh yeah,
yes. Poor Marco. He was like sitting in his chair, minding his own business. Boom, hacked.
Yeah, I'm no longer Marco anymore. Actually, that's right. They've taken my identity.
You're Kevin Butler.
That's right. Hey, that would be a pretty good gig, actually.
I don't know. I haven't seen him since the hackathon. So, in fact,
That's a good point.
He was not at the press event, and I think it was because Kevin Butler kind of gives off the feeling of being very cocky, very, very, you know, arrogant. And I think that was not where Sony was coming from. Jack Tretton coming out and literally for the first 5 minutes doing probably what some people thought was something he didn't have to do, but he did, came out and apologized again for the hacks on the Sony PlayStation Network, what they were doing to fix that and what they were offering for people who may have been worried about their identity theft, and they're actually giving away a year free identity theft kind of protection where it's a service that's actually going to watch and make sure that you haven't been hacked, and which I think is kind of nice. And they offered some free games for people to come back into it. We actually have a link in the show notes which tells you about some of the things that they offered.
Free crappy games.
They weren't that great at games.
Infamous?
Some of them are actually pretty good. I don't mind Infamous myself, but
because you're Canadian.
Well, hey, you know, you can blame it on that, but I like that game.
Dead Nation. No, but, come on.
Hey, I reviewed that game on our site, so...
We got a ridiculous amount of hits on Dead Nation from people looking for reviews on that game. How bad does this suck?
Well, actually, we didn't give it a very favorable review based on accessibility, if you remember, Steve, so...
Yeah.
So now they know. But no, to comment on what Joe said about his apology, I actually 100% do think he needs to apologize. But that's a whole other story. We could take up another podcast just talking about the apology and all of that. So I think that PlayStation is now playing a lot of catch-up in terms of, okay, we made this mistake. Now what are we going to do to show our fans and people that we want to be our fans what we're going to do next?
Do you think that's 3D gaming? Because that seemed to be kind of the big focus. Yeah, what's your guys' take on 3D gaming? Now, for full disclosure, I have one eye, So 3D doesn't mean much to me, but might mean a lot to other people.
Too
so,
many Ds.
Yeah. See, life is 3D. Like when I'm not looking at my gaming, I see my room in three dimensions. I don't need to see my TV in three dimensions. In fact, I use my TV to escape from this pesky 3D world.
Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I can't wait until we get the hologram gaming. And I understand that this is the step to get there. But although it's a cool little side trick, I think for the most part, you play it for a couple minutes and you're like, that's nice. The wrench goes in 360. Awesome. Next.
Let's not forget, gentlemen, that 3D is actually our brain getting a trick played on it, basically. And so you wonder why people leave theaters and have a huge headache after watching, let's say, Green Hornet in 3D. It's because their brain has just been tricked for the last hour and a half. And it's not.
And 3D has killed the movie industry, because I've only seen one movie in 3D that had any value other than its 3D, and it wasn't Avatar.
Well, they actually published numbers that said that whether it's a movie or a game, 2 out of 5 people cannot see the 3D, so it's useless to them. And they're putting all this money into this technology for 1 out of 5 who don't want to deal with it because it gives them headaches, 2 out of 5 who can't see it, and the other 2 out of the 5 really just don't care. They'd rather see it in 2D for $2 less.
Well, looking at it from the perspective of somebody who's maybe bedridden or might have neck issues, is it really wearing a pair of glasses on top of a pair of glasses, or just wearing the pair of glasses themselves an accessibility issue?
Well, speaking to someone who's in a bed, not really.
What's your opinion? Well, I mean,
speaking to somebody who wears glasses, I find it irritating as crud. That said, you don't have to wear glasses with the new Nintendo 3DS, and it's awesome!
Yeah, that is very cool.
It is the neatest thing in the world because it's three-dimensional right in front of my face. Again, not that I actually turn it off when I do play the thing more often than not, but as a trick, I will say that those Nintendo guys, they're onto some magic there.
So you don't think a $500 24-inch television coming out this fall
comes with two pairs
of the glasses, kind of the dorm room TV. So you get a couple of games, you get the glasses, you get a 24-inch television for $500.
Save your money.
Yeah. I was just going to say, let me tell you, for the people who like the technology, Joe, it's actually really good. But in my opinion, I'm not interested in it because let's be honest, 24 inches, first of all, that's a small TV. Secondly, if you got a group of friends over, you want to watch a movie together, there's 6 or 7 of you, that's useless for the other 5 guys.
Or just weird.
Yeah, exactly. You're sitting there watching you enjoy yourself.
So you're saying the new segment of the college kids will not be Puff Puff Pass, it'll be Pass Pass View?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, as a person who owns a 3D television, because I actually do have a very nice 55-inch Samsung in my living room that was my gift with my tax refund. I've only watched a total of 3 hours of anything 3D, and it was only to show people, look, it's 3D.
Yeah.
So much of Sony was based on that this year, and in fact, I kind of think at one point they realized how silly it was, because after every other person said, put on your glasses, about 20 minutes in, they stopped saying that, and I thought that was interesting, because I'm pretty sure at that point, I remember people talking about what was coming up in Resistance 3, and people watching at home with the raindrops on the screen that were falling thought it was a great effect. Things I read from people that were there live wearing the 3D glasses said it was an absolute hindrance to them being able to see the graphics and what was going on, and that it was used for poor effect. So
it was actually quite annoying, especially when you're trying to write down some things on your laptop or cover anything for a website like I was doing. It kind of gets in the way of the whole thing. You have to kind of look up, look down, look up, look down. So yeah, it was something else.
We'll get to the star of the event, but were there any games that you guys can highlight for Christmas, anything that you think is going to jump out for the PlayStation? I mean, I don't care how many times they show me Little Big Planet. I've never bought it, and I never will. Well, and every time you tell me that it's great, I just don't want to play it anymore.
Well, I think before we recommend games, I just want to remind anyone who's listening about ESRB and the ratings on the side of a game.
Absolutely.
The ESRB is a nonprofit organization that rates games, not from an accessibility standpoint, but from a rated E for everyone. Just think very much like movies. So, make sure you check. It's a white and black box that's on the side of every game. It's legally required to be there. So just make sure before you run out and buy these games to make sure it's appropriate for those. And I'm going to tell you something. You're wrong about Little Big Planet. It is an absolute hoot.
Okay. I'll take you on.
I have spent hours wasting my life playing that fun little sock puppet. I actually have a little sock puppet, like a real live.
You have a real sack boy.
Yes,
that's what it's called.
Yes, I really have one, and he's dressed as a sailor. Thank you very much.
I'll be initiating impeachment procedures for our president after this, Marco. If you'd like to second it,
I second Marco's that notion.
Marco's not a board member; he can't second it.
Yeah, but as a Canadian, I can override your decision.
Oh,
I believe that was in the NAFTA treaty. I'm not exactly sure how that worked out, but
there is a loophole. There is a loophole.
Yeah, it's a part of the free trade agreement. I'm almost sure of it. I agree. And real quickly, the ESRB also has a website, which is also, I believe, ESRB.com. And it is accessible with a screen reader and other magnifiers. So if you're trying to get an idea about a game that you're going to purchase for a child this Christmas, be it your son, daughter, grandson, granddaughter, you actually can go type in that name and get an idea. And it does give you some descriptions of mild violence or cartoon violence. They're very good about that.
And let's face it. Let's face it that a lot of the PlayStation games are glorified zombie killing or mass murdering games. They're the really popular ones that you would hear us recommending, Call of Duty Elite, Rage, BioShock. They're very not child friendly.
Rated M for mature.
Yeah,
exactly.
Rated for Z for zombie.
The star of the show would be the new PlayStation handheld coming out this fall, the Vio, or whatever we want to call it this week. I've seen 15 people stumble over it.
I've never heard of it.
And this is a 5-inch screen with dual sticks on it, and it has a touchpad on the back of the unit, as well as the 5-inch screen being a touchpad as well. And this is, like I said, it's going to come out for $249 as a Wi-Fi only, because this is a connected device. There will be a one to connect to 3G, and that's $299, and that's an AT&T.
More money I have to give to AT&T?
Yeah, pretty much. A whole nother bill for your connected Wi-Fi 3G playback.
Guess what I won't be getting?
I like what Kevin Pereira said, is there shouldn't be any penalty for AT&T dropouts. So any iPhone user would agree with this, I'm sure.
I am one. That's why I said another more money to AT&T.
Do you think that this is too little, too late? Has the PSP going off gracefully into that Ridge Racer movement of the past? You know, we were going to use our PSP as our rearview mirrors, and we never really did that.
I have a PSP, and I've actually I used to have a Sega handheld, which was great.
The Nomad. There was the Game Gear, and then there was the Nomad.
Yeah, mine was Color.
I had that as well, and you could get an adapter to watch TV on it as well.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yes, you could. Yes, yeah. You could.
I will say, I think that what the Sony is trying to play right up against is the iPhone, and it loses. Even with the gimmick of the touchpad on the back, which would be terrible for any gamers that are missing digits, is they're trying to compete directly against the iPhone. And I have an iPhone 4 that's got a display that's actually stronger than this PlayStation device. Huge battery of games that are $1 a piece. And I think it's a little too late. And I agree with you. I rushed out to get a PSP, the PlayStation Portable, when it came out, because I was a real fanboy, and it disappointed me. I mean, the UMD technology that it used to give you the game, you couldn't get anything on a UMD burner, so I couldn't make it anything other than what Sony wanted me to have it. And I think that's always been the problem with Sony, is it's a very closed. I mean, the iPhone is a closed or walled garden, but Sony's even worse. I mean, Sony puts in their own technology, their own compression rates and everything, so you can never create content other than what Sony wants you to have.
And then there was the whole PSP Go fiasco, which was a PlayStation Portable that was only a wireless. You could only get things from the store. Yes,
no,
nobody ever bought it.
I didn't get it. I thought it was terrible, but I mean, that's just me.
And I'm not sure that the PlayStation phone on Ericsson, which was interesting because it seemed like Sony wanted to play both sides of the fence here. They wanted to have the Verizon customers happy with the Sony Ericsson phone, the Xperia Play, and then they had AT&T happy with having exclusivity for the Via.
AT&T doesn't care. They've got the iPhone and they have the iPad. And they have a very large Android market. So, I mean, frankly, I think it's too little too late, and I don't see it being widely adopted.
I've been pretty outspoken about... Sorry, let me just jump in the wrong...
Go ahead.
I've been pretty outspoken against mobile gaming on the whole. It frightens me to see the Vita and the Wii 2, which we'll talk about here in a second. But it frightens me the way mobile gaming continues to accelerate and they continue to try to push it as the next greatest thing. These gimmicks from all three of them, in a lot of ways, bother me. I mean, I feel like they're getting away from spending the money to really make the games have a good story arc, and they're putting it into gimmicks.
But to their credit, Steve, they don't have to. Angry Bird made $1 trillion.
And it did, and that's the unfortunate stuff, is that these one-off $1 purchases are making the industry steer away from a really good saga like a Dragon Age or a Zelda, and they're steering towards, look, launch a bird into a house, wee! And, you know, the more mobile gaming comes around, the less accessible it is to the motion-impaired audience. You know, something I love quoting is that the more accessible we become, the less accessible we become. Because sure, you can take your PlayStation Portable anywhere, but it's not as easy to play. Our peripherals do not plug into it. Third-party support is a dismal at best. And that goes for low vision on screens as well as mobility reaching the buttons. It's just not a positive move forward for me.
It's funny you mentioned that part because I've played with a Game Boy Player. I never took a Sony 3000 and connected it to my TV or my PlayStation 3. I kind of thought about wanting to do that when I had a friend of mine's PlayStation 3, but I never got to it for that reason. And then even if I did, it wasn't going to be a good pixel per pixel conversion. It was going to be very jaggy, and I was going to have it in large print, but you know, I was going to give up some quality for what that looked like in the meantime. So there's that trade-off with portable gaming. I agree with what you're saying. Marco, did you get to hold one before we leave Sony here? Did you hold it? Did you get an idea of what it felt like?
No, unfortunately, I didn't. That was the one thing that I can say, is that Sony is kind of like the big boys on campus. So if you go up to their booth, sure, you can play some of their other games that are out on the booth. But if you wanted to touch the Vita, it was up on the third level of their booth. And in order to get past the third level, you literally had to get past a group of bouncers to get up there. So
okay.
It was like, oh, okay. But no, from what I could tell, you know, I agree. I completely concur with what Mark and what Steve are saying. You know, sure, there are some advantages to some gamers who don't have precision issues or other mobility issues, but for the majority of us, I mean, it is going to pose a lot of problems. But, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to keep open-minded because I do think some of the technology is cool, but like they were saying, it is a little bit too little too late.
Well, let me jump in real quick with sure. Joe. The one thing about that is Marco is absolutely correct. We have literal members of our community who the only thing that they can play is portable gaming because they can put it in front of them, they can duck their head down near the top of it so they can see it, and they can operate it with what mobility they still have. They cannot use a controller, and they cannot see even a big screen TV. So I'm happy that the options are there for them. I just wish Sony would quit trying to ram that down our throats as it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. You don't need an iPhone. Just get a Vita. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I think your point about mobile gaming catching up is very apt. Certainly when we look at who I think had the strongest of the three, Nintendo's lineup, although I'm not a big fan of the 3DS or the dual screen system for handhelds. I was more of a single screen kind of guy, but
blasphemy.
they needed to come out strong, and I made a bet with somebody that I thought the very first thing was going to be Zelda instead of that. Remember that reveal years ago with Twilight Princess? It was sort of towards the end. And sure enough, you know, this was the first thing out of the box was Zelda, because of the anniversary this year, the 25th anniversary of Zelda. So Nintendo already had people kind of excited because they had announced their console a little early. You know, with Foxconn making things, it's kind of hard not to have something leak these days. But let's talk about Nintendo and what you guys feel about their lineup. And, you know, this is a console that isn't even coming out till 2012.
Exactly.
So
I think it was a little bit to touch on that. I think it was a little preemptive, but like you say, with all these other unveils and all the other developers and such releasing all these things with Microsoft and Sony, they, you know, you got to sort of keep up and say, well, listen, we still have our hand in the game. But my whole thing of it is that, and we can touch on the Wii U in a second. The technology, I think, is it's almost a little strange because it's going to be at the level of what the PlayStation 3 and what the Xbox is at right now, but a year from now. I mean, sure, it might be a little bit better, but really, it's kind of an odd game of catch-up, and that was the one thing that I noticed off the bat.
Well, but before you go any further, before you guys jump in, the first thought in my mind was shovelware ports. The entire back catalogs for these systems would just magically shovel themselves onto the Nintendo, because there are some people who will just buy Nintendo anything. They'll wait until GoldenEye comes out. They'll wait till
more
Zelda
Star Fox.
Or Metroid. Yeah, Star Fox. They'll wait for that key Nintendo title, and then that's where the third party, because third parties generally don't do extremely well on Nintendo platforms historically. So it sounded to me like, look, you can take all your BioShocks and all the stuff you couldn't sell on the Wii and the GameCube. We've duct taped four of these together now, and boom, here you go. But go ahead, guys. I'm sorry. I just wanted to jump in on that point.
I think you're right, and I guarantee you $1 million to donuts that if Steve Jobs has not already invented one, then Apple will come out with a little mini joystick that can stick onto your iPad, and it'll be a Wii U.
Out there, actually.
Yeah, there's a couple. ThinkGeek actually has the iCade, which is really cool, where you can put an iPad into an arcade unit, and it works with a Bluetooth joystick.
I'm thinking they'll actually release a version of the iPad with it built in. Is what I'm thinking.
Oh, no, they have one you can stick right to its glass and pop it off when you don't want it.
Exactly. Yeah, actually, we reviewed that on the site. It's called the Fling by 10-1 Designs, actually. So, I don't believe that review is up there.
We have a site?
Yeah.
AbleGamers.com, Steve. AbleGamers.com.
I should go there sometime. What was it again?
AbleGamers.com.
There's this thing called a bookmark now. It's really cool.
It's one of the best sites I've ever been to.
I have one. It's a little kitty. It fits in my books.
I think the Nintendo, back to just because I think we've got to wrap up soon, I believe. But I think the Nintendo U, I think it's a really intriguing idea. I think it actually is disastrous at both ends. Because for those of you guys that don't like mobile gaming because you hate small screens, it's going to give you one of those. And for those that like mobile gaming and don't like big screens, well, you got one of those too.
I'd like the concept of being able to play your game, and let's describe it a little bit. The Nintendo Wii U, they're not going to call it 2 because it's difficult for that to come out Japanese-wise. Is PlayStation 2 was always very difficult, but Wii U sounds more Japanese. I think that's exactly why that was chosen, not just you know, because it's Wii and then U, the letter U, by the way, is the way that's spelled. But it's a console that's coming out next year, and the controller, which probably costs as much as the console, has a 6.1-inch touchscreen. It has a microphone on it. It has a front and a back-facing camera. It has the sensor bar that already exists on the Wii, because the idea is that you can actually play your games on the controller while somebody's watching television. So if your significant other wishes to watch Torchwood Miracle Day and you want to play Pilot Wings, you can actually still stay in the same room rather than ostracize a family member. And you can play this game completely on the console, hit pause, go back to the regular television, and actually pick up where you left off on the big screen. In fact, some people have said that this is a bigger version of the DS in a way, because the controller would be your touchpad, and then the big screen would be your other second screen for the DS.
But to jump in there, I don't think that's all they're planning to do. Some of the stuff I've heard them talking about as well is games that actually do both. at the same exact time. It's kind of augmented reality type games.
Yeah, like that one where they paint faces on helicopters.
Yeah, you have to use the little controller to, quote, find things in your big TV. Which
like
I could just see.
I heard for Call of Duty, you would use it like a scope.
Mm-hmm. I can just see more controllers going through TVs now than ever.
What was that, Marco?
This is going to be expensive.
I was going to say, I think that technology is its blessing, but also its curse. You know, for me, I wrote a review on or a preview on our on the website that basically, you know, hailed the Wii U. But then, of course, we also, to play devil's advocate, released an article the very next day or the same day about some of the disadvantages. And I don't know if this is going to come into fruition or not, but my understanding is you're only going to be able to stream the data from your TV to one of those handheld controllers on the Wii U because it's in 720p HD, and it's impossible to send those signals to two controllers at the same time. So I think that's a little interesting that they didn't really think of that when they were developing the technology. But
it doesn't go through walls. I heard it, the reason why they promoted the whole same room aspect is because the signal that they're doing is kind of proprietary and it's not going to travel very far. So far, remember, this is still prototype that we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen.
And let me just say that the lead writer of Able Gamers, Rob McCauley, he's a low vision gamer. And his words to me, he was in on the coverage remotely with Marco. His words to me initially were, well, that's useless to me because I'll never be able to see those tiny blank letters. And I said, well, what if you put them on the screen? And he was saying, most of those kind of portable games don't even have the options to increase the font sizes. And he needs a bigger words in order to be able to see these words and interact with the game. You know, and that's one of the criteria that we score for on AbleGamers.com reviews, that whether or not you have the options to resize. And if the Wii U is not smart enough to make sure that these developers put in options to make things more visible, even though it's a tiny blank screen, you're going to be running into nightmares for all kinds of accessibility.
Well, I don't think what they're doing.
While we're talking here real quick, let me interrupt, Steve. We're going to open it up for questions. We're going a little longer tonight. So Michael's going to open it up for questions in a little bit, and then we'll get general thoughts on how we're going. Okay, I'm sorry, Steve.
Well, that was Mark. The way they're looking at these games is there's the TV version of the game and there's the little screen version of the game. And I think Rob's correct in his ideas, but I didn't see anything that told me that the PlayStation or the Nintendo U was a portable gaming device. It literally is portable as long as you're standing right next to the Wii. So it's going to be a special class of games. And just to play devil's advocate here, I mean, I was one of the thousands or billions of people that looked at what the Wii was when they first announced it and went, ha, who the heck's going to want to play something like that? That is silly. Now it's everywhere. And frankly, everyone was saying the same thing I was saying. You know, oh, look at little Nintendo coming out with their standard definition gaming console when everyone's got, you know, 1 trillion p, and they kind of shut me up.
Well, but even then, that went off a cliff, right? It sold, and then it was your pet rock. It was, you know, it hit its plateau. Can they bring people back? Because they did. To me, it felt like they were definitely coming back to the hardcore. Now, you can still use your Wii remotes and your other Wii paraphernalia with the Wii U. In fact, it's backwards compatible with the Wii, not the GameCube. So there's some backwards compatibility, you know, which says to me that the GameCube games are going to come to the
Nintendo App Store. You know, Jill, I said that to somebody, the part about the – I think – or I'm hoping, rather, that our technology that vendors put out for accessible equipment that Able Gamers recommends – right. Will be backwards compatible, and his words to me were, well, not everything worked with the GameCube after X release, so I wouldn't look forward to work for this in the long run either. That's concerning.
Yeah, and again, there's no guarantee. I mean, they're going to sell to the Nintendo hardcore, right? I mean, the 30 million that absolutely love Mario.
Zelda.
But I take issue, Joe, with your hard that they're going back to the hardcore. I mean, frankly, I don't think Nintendo and the word hardcore was never something that came together.
Kirby is hardcore.
Kirby is not hardcore.
If you look at, he ripped yarn. He was into it.
If you look at, I mean, I'm going to make a gross generalization right now, but if you were to look at the entire compendium of Nintendo games, you'll find two that are rated mature. I mean, almost without exception, they're all rated E for everyone. They're all geared towards the opposite of the hardcore. I mean, they're just now on the Nintendo 3DS putting out games that are rated M for mature, the Tom Clancy's and stuff like that. I mean, Zelda, I love Zelda. I've loved my Mario. I've loved all of those things, but I would never call those games hardcore.
Well, don't you think that they tried that last year with Metroid Other M in that kind of... I mean, who's the execution problem there? Was that Team Ninja? Was that a bad concept? Was that, you know, because I think Retro did really well with the Metroid Prime series, but they certainly seem to have erred in a big way when they went after the adult market.
They erred because you went after an adult market when no adult, for the most part, owns the console. Yeah. Every Wii that I know was bought for, you know, either someone who's never been a gamer and they're introducing themselves into gaming because they're trying to get into shape and they want to use the exercising capabilities of it, or for their child. Yeah. Well, if those are your market, putting out Metroid for adults, who's going to play that?
Games like Metroid are a little strange anyway because they're kind of like the Pulp Fictions of the gaming world. It's like you have a certain segment, 3% of the population is very loud, that loves the game, and the rest either hate it or don't know what the heck it is.
I agree.
The only adult game that jumps into my head at the moment for Nintendo goes back to Eternal Darkness, and that was Silicon Knights. I mean, that's going way back.
But that goes to my point, is how are you going to put out a game that's primarily an adult target audience when no adults own your console?
Yeah.
I want to ask you, this is Michael Loff. I want to ask you, just posted something to your website today talking about Adroid controllers. What is that?
Oh, that's interesting. What is that? Steve?
Adroid controllers is a new concept that will be coming out from a partnership between Evil Controllers and the Evil Gamers Foundation. We are launching a line of controllers that will be accessible to a larger portion of your audience as well as ours. These controllers will be an interesting concept, and we hope to bring more information later to date.
I think what Steve's trying to say is we're working with a partner to create controllers for our community that were designed by members of our community.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really focusing, as we've started this adventure with Evil Controllers, on cost and flexibility, customization, the ability to just customize it because, you know, show me 10 people with muscular dystrophy and I'll show you 10 different diseases because it manifests in everybody in a different way. So, you know, we've teased it out. We've actually released today, it's breaking news that, you know, that the Adroit by Able Gamers is going to be some controllers. But we haven't really released what the controllers are going to be yet. We have a couple of prototypes in-house that we're finalizing some designs on. And I think in the next couple of weeks, Steve?
Yeah, pretty much.
You'll start getting some details on our first piece de resistance in the controller market.
Yeah, we've already got heirs and such wanting the prototypes and to go play with them. So we'll be definitely be getting more information out soon.
We'd love to have you guys back on at some point to talk about that and more. Let's talk in general. Is there anything we didn't cover tonight that you guys wanted to touch on? Did we miss a game? Or is there something going on at the site also that you would like to mention tonight?
We will be doing an expo at the World Congress on Disability in Atlantic City coming up in September. We are currently doing a funding drive to help put up our stations there. I don't want to run you too far over, but one of the things that we do is we go around to these different events, PAX, the Disability Congress, etc., and we set up stations where someone can walk up or roll up with a disability, low vision, what have you, and play a game as the technology allows. For example, we have a vision, a low vision game. What is it called, Mark? In the Pit?
In the Pit.
In the Pit. A great game. We recommend it to all low vision gamers. It's also for blind gamers. There's no visual at all. It's all audio.
It's $4 and it's on the Xbox network.
And we have these displays set up so that you can try them and play them. And if I could, real quick, an anecdote from Mark about displaying this game.
Go right
to
ahead.
An old woman.
Yeah, she was. We were in Indiana, and a woman who was she claimed, even though she didn't look it, that she was 72. Kind of said, "Hey, I heard you guys have games in here." And she was completely blind. And I said, "Yes, we do." She goes, "Well, do you have any games for the blind?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I do. Come over here and let me show you this game, In the Pit." And I sat her down, and I do what I always do because it's a lot of people in the room, and we had 8 stations going on. So I handed her the controller, explained where all the buttons were, and I said, "You just listen to the instructions, and I'll send you on your way." So I'm sitting here talking to some other people, and all of a sudden I hear, "In the Pit, the concept of the game is you're a monster that lives in a pit, but because it's a pit, it's dark. Therefore, you have to do everything with sound." And all of a sudden, I hear this monster chewing on people. You know, so you hear this, "Bleh!" as someone gets eaten, quote-unquote, by the monster. And I start hearing this, and I turn, and this lady in her 70s was, like, on, like, level 8. She was highest of the day.
Yeah.
And I said, "Wow, you're doing really good." And she had this huge smile on her face, and she goes, "I've never played a video game in my life, and this is absolutely amazing. I'm having such a great time." And that really kind of made me feel great because, mm-hmm. you know, here's a game that's a $4 game on the Xbox network called, you know, In the Pit, and someone just brought it to our attention, and we just, this lady who had never gamed before was having a thrilling time doing it.
And the point of these expos is to take our knowledge of equipment, put them together with knowledges of games that many people may not know about, and really show disabled people how to play in a way that they might not be able to play without some of this expensive technology, what expensive technology is worth buying, what is not, and really to also raise awareness to people who might not think they're gamers that, hey, this could be a fun outlet for you. But at any rate, it's ablegamers.org. is our funding source.
The Able Gamers Foundation is a 501c3 public charity, and everything that you've heard us talk about today, mm-hmm. including us being on this show, all the reviews that we do that you can read, and all the work that you'll see us do is made possible by donations from people.
And so, also, we're an all volunteer organization. None of us talking here today or anybody who works quote unquote for Able Gamers gets paid. No one's ever earned a penny. We do this for the good of the disabled community.
I'm missing the season premiere of Futurama to be on this show right now.
It does repeat at 11 o'clock Central. I'm aware. We'll get close to wrapping up.
Tino is my friend.
Absolutely. And we recognize that. And there's a couple other premieres tonight. We're up against, I think, some actual, whatchamacallit, that television, that reality stuff. You know,
Burn Notice. I missed Burn Notice for this.
I appreciate you guys coming on.
Marco still here?
I am still here.
Oh, hey, Marco.
I am. No, the reason I'm being quiet is because I really think it was important for you guys to outline that stuff about the foundation and
donations. There, I said it.
You got a closing comment for us tonight, Marco?
I guess I would just say, keep in mind that, as the gentleman had said, Able Gamers is out there for all the right reasons. I think the site is steadily growing. Our audience is growing, and we just hope that with the people who are listening tonight, that you'll really develop an appreciation for what we're trying to do with the organization and with the foundation. And we'll see a bunch of you sign up tomorrow morning because you want to see what's the latest and greatest from ablegamers.com.
And there's a lot of mainstream games that people play who are blind or visually impaired, certainly fighting games, Mortal Kombat. I know MK Freak out there on Twitter and Liam Irvin and some others that listen play that, and Street Fighter and Blaze Blue. And there are lots of games out there. There are several people who play blind on Mortal Kombat on the championship level. Talking to NetherRealms will kind of give you an idea about that. Rock Band, there are games
out there.
Yeah, those are memorization type games where as the musical notes come up, you press the keys in time. And sometimes that doesn't require vision at all. In fact, if you're the Dragon Force song might, but unless you're really, really good. But there are mainstream games out there and people that have PlayStations and Xboxes who are totally blind. And that's why we wanted to do this tonight, was to kind of give people a primer and an overview of these types of things and what's being talked about in multiple disabled communities. And in the show notes, we have all the links for tonight, some of the articles that we talked about, some of the reviews, if you want to learn more about what these guys talk about and you want to get a more in-depth view, because we kind of just barely scratched the surface tonight, go over to our show notes or head over to ablegamers.com or org.
Hey, and just for all the low vision or vision impaired people, we also actually offer most of Able Gamers content in audio form.
That's true.
If you go to ablegamers.com/audio, that'll actually take you to a it's a service that we provide, which has all of the stuff that we talk about in our stories turned into MP3s so that you can download them and listen to the stories if you want.
Yeah, it converts them to text-to-speech, and it's actually really good. And if you're on the main site, if you drop down to the bottom part of the page, there'll be a link called audio, and that'll get you there, too, if you don't remember the direct site that we mentioned tonight. So,
and, Joe, also, I just want to mention before we go that remember that all the things that we learned from this year's E3, we're obviously going to take in stride and take with us next year, because our goal, obviously, is to go back out to E3, so... I mean, all the things that we learned about accessibility and all the about everything that we did do at E3, we're going to take that with us. So if your viewers or your listeners, I should say, do have any sort of comments or questions or things that they would like us to ask at future events, they can always, you know, email you or email us and let us know, and we can keep those things in mind.
And if you have any complaints, email Steve.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown. Also, I have on here a couple of websites in our show notes, whattheyplay.com. That's a great site for finding out about what's in the content of the games. It's parents writing about games and whether you should purchase them for your children or not. Gamefacts.com, that's a great way of kind of playing with your gamer who's sighted, and you can kind of sort of be the co-pilot, let them drive, and then you can kind of read the fact and know what's coming around the corner and kind of be the tour guide to work them through that. I know a gentleman who was playing Halo with his son that way, and he was able to kind of get into the fiction and learn more about it and be a part of the family by reading Game Facts and then talking with his son afterwards. And then some other links there in the show notes, so definitely hit it up over at sarotalk.com. I'm going to bring Michael back into the picture here. Hey, Michael.
Yes.
I believe we will jump into our voice chat room over at the System Access Mobile Network. So as soon as we wrap up here, you can come and continue the conversation about what we talked about tonight or other technology. You can get a 7-day free trial of System Access Mobile Network by heading over to www.satogo.com. And you can see myself there. I'll be there in a little bit. And then also, I think we've got a This Month in Assistive Technology next week.
That's right. On June 30th, we're going across the pond to the UK, and three folks will give us their perspective on the big tech events that took place in the month of June. Of course, July coverage of the different conventions and things going on. So, as always, your suggestions, resources at sarotalk.com, or call our blab line, as someone's doing right now. And that's toll-free 866-997-BLAB or 2522. So we thank all of you. It was a great presentation. And until we meet again next week, let's all stay connected and stay directed.
This concludes another Sarotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Sarotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.